What's up, everybody? This is Noah Kinsey.
And Jonesy.
And you're listening to the UFR Podcast.
Roll it.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 56 of Upon Further Review.
Ow, 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 ow.
Today, we're going to be talking about that 1974 Mel Brooks classic, Young Frankenstein. I'm really excited about this.
Yeah?
I'm really excited.
Like on a scale of 1 to 10.
10.
Really?
Almost 11.
Damn.
Excited.
Damn, boy.
So what did you think of this? Have you seen it before? What are your thoughts?
So I've watched a lot of Mel Brooks movies, but I have not seen Blazing Saddles.
Okay.
And I have not seen this particular
movie.
So this is my first time watching it.
Wow. What'd you think?
I passed out the first 30 minutes of it, and then I had to rewatch it twice just to finish it.
Really?
I did.
Wow.
I did. It's tough, too, because I like Mel Brooks movies, you know? Uh-huh. Like, I'm a fan.
Well, like, what ones are you a fan of? Because you haven't seen Blazing Saddles or Young Frankenstein, which are, like, the ones he's most known for.
Right. And when I got introduced to Mel Brooks, it was mainly with Robin Hood, Men in Tights.
My favorite, but that's way more goofy, way more
right.
spoofy.
So I did. And the funny part is the pacing's different.
Oh, totally.
Obviously. What else? Dracula, Dead and Loving It.
Awesome.
With Leslie Nielsen. Spaceballs.
Uh-huh.
Those were the main ones that I got introduced to him
with. Yeah, those are very different than his earlier stuff.
And that's when I kind of found out, especially watching Young Frankenstein, right?
Frankenstein?
So, Frankenstein.
Frodrick.
So, I don't know, man. It was tough for me to kind of get through. I think for me, it was mainly because of the pacing.
Okay.
Now, understand this. Like, I'm not a huge, and you know what, guys out in podcast land, if you guys hear this, don't give me shit. Or you know what? Fuck you. Give me shit. Whatever. I'm not a big fan of the Monty Pythons either.
Okay.
I can't get into those better than the movies. My friends, you know, my friends are all like, oh my God, you don't like Monty Python? You're absolutely ridiculous. I'm like, I like a lot of things. I just, the timing and the pacing within that, it just doesn't sit very well with me. The closest, like, European style humor that I can watch is like the Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
You know, those types of movies, the
pacing, trilogy.
The pacing's totally different.
Sure.
I cannot get into British type of humor. To me, though, Mel Brooks, in all of his excitement, the pacing was just too slow for me, knowing what...
Well, what you're used to, the fast pace of the other
of the
three
other
that you mentioned.
Stuff that I did.
Because those are like jokes on top of jokes on
exactly.
top of references.
Exactly, and the story moves really flawlessly.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like boom, 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 boom.
Uh-huh.
This one, you know, they're long sweeping sequences. You know, the whole classroom scene. Though, I will tell you... I thought they were constructed really well.
Uh-huh.
I enjoyed watching them from what they were. I just felt – I'm like, I'm waiting for them to get to the next point.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, but it sounds like you fucking love this movie.
I do.
If I had a dick, it'd be in your mouth right now.
Pretty much.
Sweet. What is it about this movie that you like so much?
You know, it'd be a big one.
Oh, jeez. Although I did like the punchline up at the very end of this movie because I love a good dick joke.
Yeah.
There was some good stuff there. And I enjoy that because that was quintessential, you know, Mel Brooks style for me. Just I think the pacing was the thing that fucked me over.
Sure. And if you're used to those other movies, for sure, this is different.
Yeah.
And I think because I own the Blu-ray, the Mel Brooks collection, which sadly has everything but Dracula, Dead and Loving It, which makes me sad because I love that one. So stupid, but so fun. So you can see all the slower pace, the History of the World Part 1. High anxiety, the something chairs, seven chairs. I don't really remember what that's called, but that was based on an old fable. A lot of Blazing Saddles, a lot of slower paced stuff. Young Frankenstein is really like you can start to see his segue, his transition into the stuff that you're
gotcha.
Used to. But for me, I love it. Like, I love, to me, I wrote down perfect. And the reason that I say that is just because it mirrors so much Mary Shelley's Frankenstein story.
Right.
It kind of is just the parallel where it's like he gets to the progression of his grandfather, you know, so it kind of mirrors him having Igor,
right,
having the assistant and having just the townspeople and the constable and everybody all against him and raising up. And it's just, it mirrors that story, but in more of a spoof, tongue-in-cheek kind of way.
Mel Brooks is ultimately the first spoof guy.
He's the one that actually constructed a story around spoof.
Right.
Like, and you miss that with, like, Meet the Spartans and superhero movie. A Haunted House
and all those Wayans Brothers movies.
They wrote the gags and they're like, I guess I need to write a script around it instead. Because really, yeah, Mel Brooks was kind of the grandfather of that, where it's like, it needs a story. And you can see that in the Police Squad and then Naked Guns and stuff like that. And Airplane. You can see a lot of the Mel Brooks influences on those.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just, it's all of the characters I feel are perfect in what they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
You know, they're all spoofs of those archetypes.
Totally.
In a way that still felt like an original story.
Right. Yeah. One of the biggest strengths I find of this entire movie, in my opinion, was the characters themselves.
Yeah, I don't feel like there was a weak character at all.
None. I mean, all the way up to Frankenstein and
Frankenstein's monster.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Frankenstein's monster.
Abby, you know, Normal.
All those, you know, all those characters were individual and they all just kind of fit into a world. And that's something that I ultimately loved about the movie, because you're curious to see how they were going to react. I mean, the police chief, hilarious.
Yeah.
You know,
what?
What? Huh? And then he slowly says it. Like, that type of stuff is really funny.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And the character is just so good.
Yeah.
And I mean, for me as a writer, like, creating those types of weird, quirky characters is something that I would love to throw into my own, like, worlds, if you will, per se. But at the same time, I find that some of the things lingered within the jokes for too long. I mean, Gene Wilder's like the king of the awkward pause.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, the comedic timing that he has.
He has his own cadence, very specific.
He really, really does. The hard part for me, I think, is that I'm not a huge Gene Wilder fan.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm not a very huge Gene Wilder fan. I don't know what it is. I just – sometimes I feel like he's just –
Well, he's very specific.
Right.
So, like, I feel you – if you don't like him, it's hard to grab onto a movie he stars in because he makes it his. It's just like if you're not a Russell Brand fan, you watch a movie with Russell Brand as the star, you probably won't like it because he is Russell Brand, for better or for worse, in everything he does.
Right. Well, I think for me, it wasn't some – I mean, I like his characterizations and things like that. Just there's some of the performances, at least in this particular movie, I just didn't believe.
Gotcha.
And I
– yeah, they were a little larger than life at certain
points. Right, and to a point where, like, I understand you want to make this funny because I get it. It's supposed to be slapstick and spoofy and all that type of stuff. But there is moments where I wanted to be serious, but yet – they pushed it too far over to where there was just times I just didn't believe certain things, you know? And I was like, ugh, damn it. You know, or when he's like yelling about certain things, he just yells a lot.
Yeah, he does yell a lot.
He yells a lot. I'm just like, why are you yelling? Take it easy there, dude.
Yeah.
You know, but that's my own. Sure. You know, that's my own opinion.
And I think that was his little nuggets to, or little breadcrumbs that lead up to him being the mad scientist. Because he has those moments of, like, yelling because a mad scientist.
Any movie he's in, he's yelling.
Right. But I'm saying for this, I feel like the reason that he did it was to be like, there's potential for him to go from Frankenstein to Frankenstein. And just becoming the mad scientist. Going from the very logical, very, like, dismissive of his family legacy to then fully embracing it. I love Madeline Kahn. I love her in everything.
Madeline Kahn was
his fiance.
Yes. She's hilarious.
Wonderful in everything, and she was so funny in this.
Not the hair. Yeah, not the hair. Yeah. The nails.
Literally everything.
Yeah, I love those. I mean, the thing that Mel Brooks does extremely well is he plays these little scenes so beautifully. Because they all feel like stage performances, in my opinion. So it's almost like a vaudevillian type of stage act,
yeah.
Especially, you know, when we get introduced to his fiance or his financier, and him, you know, before he leaves on the train, like that whole moment was just hilarious.
Yeah. And it also plants in your mind that you rooting for him and his assistant to get together because they're really not right for each other. Him and Madeline Kahn,
right.
Really aren't right for each other. He wants to be affectionate. She wants nothing of it.
Right.
And so it's like, now there's this gorgeous assistant who like, nice knockers. Oh, thank you, doctor.
Uh-huh. But see, though, that moment right there, that's what I'm saying. Like some of those little key like jokes, you know, like they're knocking on the door. And he goes, nice knockers. And she goes, oh, thank you. I was just like, my wife and I both are like, really?
I thought that's funny.
Really? That? All right. Okay, Mel Brooks. I'll give you that freebie.
And the werewolf.
Yeah.
Their wolf. Their castle.
Yeah. See?
Why are you talking like that? I thought that's how we were talking.
Right. Yeah, little things like that.
If you notice, he also have a signature Mel Brooks gag of the walk this way. Like, there's that in Robin Hood Men in Tights, where it's like, walk this way, and then they all, like, swish for the Sheriff of Nottingham.
Uh-huh.
They'll do the swish and then just prance away. Had it here when Igor picks him up from the train station.
Right, which they almost cut, by the way.
Gives him the cane. Oh, yeah?
Yeah, they were going to cut that out, but... in an early screening that Mel Brooks did with an audience, they laughed at it. So he's like, all right, I guess I'll just keep it in there. Uh-huh. So that was a scene that was actually going to get kicked out.
Interesting.
I thought so too.
Yeah.
I could take it or leave it.
I mean, it's just signature him.
Yeah.
Cause like he has that in a lot of his stuff where he just thinks like, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I'm going to add it to like everything. So I thought that was interesting because I didn't really notice it the first time I saw it.
You know what I always thought was, I was just like Hitchcock. He always makes a cameo in most of his, in all of his movies. This particular one is one that he doesn't make a cameo in.
I was going to say, I didn't see him at all.
Yeah, and I was paying attention to, because I know that in the other movies, he's always in them. You know, he has a part for himself or whatever. But I guess Gene Wilder told him that he said, if we're going to make this movie, you cannot have a part in it because it'll take away from the illusion of the Frankenstein and all that type of stuff. Well, because he's such a big character, right? And they kind of played it off of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. Where would he have fit in, you know, into that overall type of that atmosphere? So Mel Brooks said, all right, fine, whatever. But he also made audible cameos. So like the cat that gets stuck by the dart and things like those are his little voices.
He's like, damn it, Gene, I'm going to be in this.
I'm going to be in this somehow. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Yeah, the scenes I think are really fun. My favorite character out of everybody was the chief of police and Igor. Those two are hilarious to me. The other thing too that I thought was really
cool. Aerosmith was they came up with the Walk This Way song based on that scene from Young Frankenstein.
Did they really?
Yeah.
That's pretty fucking funny. The Frau Bluch. That lady I thought was awesome.
Clarice Leachman.
Yeah, dude, like I was like, what? I've seen that lady in so many other movies. She's so young in this one, but I thought her character was really funny too. But I mean I get it. I understand it. Is it to me, I don't know if it's a perfect fucking movie though. I think
it is when it comes to like a script because the characters were all archetypes for Mary Shelley, but yet weren't just there to just necessarily provide jokes or just be the archetypes. Like they all were functional within the story, which I think is in a lot of spoof movies, you just have those people because it's like, oh yeah, because in the real version, they're such and such. This way it's like, no, they actually serve a purpose. They do something. I love that they generated electricity from a kite.
Yeah.
I thought that was...
That's pretty funny.
Pretty funny.
Yeah.
Even like, you know, the Frau Bruja, she, you know, she was the one to get Dr. Frankenstein downstairs. Mm-hmm. She enticed him with the music and all the stuff to get him down there. You know?
Yes.
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 Yes. So I love her.
I mean, from lingering... a plot to plot point, yes. Plot wise, I think it, you know, again, character, plot, things like that, I thought did pretty decently. I think the hard part for me is like Frankenstein horrors type genre-y stuff, I don't really care too much about. Sure. You know, I've seen tons of remakes of Frankenstein and all that stuff. To be honest with you, I like Frankenstein as a character. I mean, I've read Mary Shelley's Frankenstein and all those types of stuff, you know, which she wrote when she was 16.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she did it for a contest and ended up killing it.
And that stood the test 16. Of time.
Yeah, and I, you know, and
way to make me not feel accomplished.
But to me, you know, watching this movie, maybe it was just my mindset coming in because I was just like, okay, another fucking Frankenstein movie. And that's all it really felt like. And I don't know, because of the jokes, they started kind of falling flat. But as I really think about the movie, there are moments that are funny. There are moments that I think are humorous.
You didn't like the
not really.
What? Oh, that kills me every really time.
I didn't care.
You don't like that?
It's not so much that I don't like it. It just doesn't give me. No, it doesn't really, you know.
Interesting.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Sorry, dude.
No, that's fine. One thing interesting is Madeline Kahn and Terry Garr actually auditioned for the other
parts.
Like, for the opposite roles.
Oh, that's pretty funny.
So I thought that was interesting. I mean, granted, they casted it much better. Like,
yeah,
the way
totally
it was.
Totally.
Terry Garr was gorgeous back then.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, dude. She
was like, whoa.
I looked her up. I looked her up to what she looks like now. I was like, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And not like a hubba hubba wow. Like a honk honk wow.
That's so funny. One thing I didn't realize until watching it this time was I did not know, and I've seen this a dozen times at least, I didn't know Gene Hackman was a blind guy. For some reason, I didn't recognize him the first time
dude,
I saw it.
I caught him right away.
Yeah, but this time I'm like, wait a second.
I thought it was really funny. That?
His espresso line was improvised.
Uh-huh.
That's why they did the blackout so fast, because
so
everyone was laughing.
Yeah, I heard about that. I thought that was pretty interesting, too.
One thing I want to mention is, like, how long was Frankenstein dead before they found the body? Because when they opened up the casket, he was, like, skeleton. So I'm like, damn, he just died? I don't think so.
Well, I mean, they did show the sign, right? Like, when he first comes down into the cellar, it says like 10-year-old or 5-year-olds, dead 5 years, dead 3 years, dead 1 year.
But I mean, Frankenstein himself.
Right. So my assumption is, if we look at dead he was and how dead the faces were on there, maybe 5.
Yeah, you know, interesting, though. Why would they wait that long to bring him the inheritance, I wonder?
I don't know, actually. I don't know. There was a whole scene. There was a whole scene that they had with the other people that were getting the inheritance of Frankenstein. Uh-huh. And Dr. Frankenstein, and they cut the whole part out. They did a whole scene with all that. That might explain some of that stuff, but Mel Brooks didn't feel that it was necessary.
No.
So they kind of kept
it
out.
Good to be concise this way, because it makes him more like, it helps with him being reluctant. Like,
yeah, but I mean, even still, to your question though, I mean, it doesn't really, who cares how long in between. I don't know, that's not really the point. All we know is that they just gotta he's dead. My question, I guess, would be like, why now?
Right
Yeah. Like, well, why all of a sudden?
Yeah.
Because the town's been quiet and somebody needs to stir up some shit. All right. Well,
the only thing
that
I didn't necessarily know is, why was he coming to the castle? They didn't really necessarily make it clear. I would assume to sort out all the things, but they never necessarily clarified.
It just seems like he got everything.
Yeah.
They're like, you have a fucking castle.
Yeah.
With all the people that work here
but
for you.
It wasn't really clear whether he was moving there or whether he was just going there to pick up some stuff, because he got an assistant, where I'm like, why does
he
need
assistant?
Well, the assistant
was already bought or already hired before, remember? Because Igor picked her up.
But yeah, exactly. So it's like, there, it wasn't really clear why he would need an assistant.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's just to kind of keep it to canon. I don't know.
Well, for sure. But I mean, for this narratively, it's like, why?
Yeah, it just
he's
seems
not expecting to do experiments, or he doesn't.
Well, and
know.
That's the interesting thing. I think for me too, like the arc of the character, he was so against it in the very beginning, and he's transitioned so quickly into Dr. Frankenstein.
Well, when he saw it was possible, he is a scientist, and when he thought it might be possible to bring a man back to life and to have that power, then he was just like, why not?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it was too quick of a transition. You know, I mean, it's obviously a movie's an hour and a half or whatever, so you got to move rather quickly. But that opening scene when we first get introduced to him, he's so angry. He's like, no, it's not.
Stabs himself with the scalpel.
Basically, he's that frustrated over. Which I like how they're already kind of making him seem crazy in that moment himself. Obviously, he stabs himself, right? Like, he's already kind of a mad scientist when he has all of his conviction. But at the same time, I feel like it was like, oh, the books say it can be done. All of a sudden, everything that he just screamed out to the high heavens was wrong, and he was easily, his ego was completely like, all right, well, let's try it out.
I feel like his ego is the reason that he tried it out in the first place. He's like, I can achieve what my grandfather did, or at least tried to do.
Yeah. I get that. But I just didn't buy it.
Which is fine. I mean, part of having a spoof is it constantly is winking at you.
Yeah, this one is very much like there was a moment and then it was like, wink.
Well, all of them have to. I mean, spoof movies really have to be like, I mean, not as, once again, like Meet the Spartans, a superhero movie where it's like looking at the camera. Because in this movie, blah, 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 like instead it's kind of like, you know what we're talking about, right? You know, there's always that self-awareness of giving the audience a second to, like, remember what they're referring to.
Because
you just have that in spoof. So with spoof movies, I don't grade them the same way I do our serious movies. Because, you know, they're not. They're intentionally comedy. They're intentionally there. But I thought it was a really good story that was a parallel with Mary Shelley's story. And I love his way of trying to appease the people by showing that it's a gentle creature, you know? And I love that the way that they showed Frankenstein's monster to not be evil, like playing with a little kid, you know, even spending time with the blind guy and putting up with his, I love when he was pouring him the soup right into his lap. You know, and then breaking his glass and things like that.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
So I thought it hit all the beats that it was supposed to hit for that story. I do agree that it's not as quite fast pace as Mel Brooks' later films. And for me, actually, I've watched Spaceballs like 30 times. And the last time I watched it, I didn't laugh at all. Because I felt like there was too many jokey jokes that I've heard before. So it's like the punchlines.
Well, after 30 times, dude.
No, I know. Yeah, and that's it. But I feel like with this one, because there was an actual story, this is one that I could watch often because it's not just constantly like searching for the joke to then do like ba-doom-tsh.
Like, see, that's where I disagree, man. I feel like this whole movie, that's what it was. This whole movie was them fishing for jokes just to get that, like, that quick laugh in.
You feel like the script is written around jokes?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, see, I don't think that at all.
I mean, easy enough with the knockers joke. I mean, like, things like that happen throughout the entire film. You know, and to me, those are kind of like one of those things that you're calling those things out. Oh, nice knockers. Look at the camera. Ha ha ha. You're supposed to laugh at your laugh track or whatever.
Right. But I don't feel like the script was built around that. I feel like that came like, okay, now we're in front of the castle. We're moving. What's a joke we can say that we're here?
Yeah.
I don't think it was written like a, you know, those movies that I referenced before where it's like, like in Meet the Spartans, they just had like Shrek babies for no reason whatsoever because you're supposed to be like, ha ha ha, Shrek. But there's no story around that to even give it sort of context. It's like Family Guy where it's like, oh, something random I wasn't expecting. Anyway, like pop culture reference, pop culture reference, pop culture reference, and no story whatsoever. I feel like there was a through line with this that had those elements and it didn't feel like they're like, okay, we came up with this joke. Now what is a line that can justify getting to it?
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. I mean, well, I see what you mean. I don't know if it
feels like it was more written. Here is the sequence of scenes that mirrors the Mary Shelley's story. Now, what are jokes we can say in these? Like, let's look around the environment. What are things that we could reference that could have like Mel Brooksian type of humor, And I feel like that's how it was. Those jokes were constructed, like the throwaway jokes.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, I don't know. I get, like I said, I get what you're saying with like constructing the jokes and then putting the story with jokes. I just feel that there was a lot of those little like kitschy.
Yeah, but that's ones, Mel Brooks. You know? That's what he does. That's that little dude. That little guy. But other than that, I thought cinematography was great. It was great classic monster movie type cinematography. Mm-hmm. Same thing with the music.
Yeah.
I thought they did really well with both celebrating and spoofing that genre.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I loved it was in black and white. I thought that added an interesting element.
Yeah.
They have it colorized, but I refuse to watch that version because this is how it's supposed to be made. Mm-hmm. So I want to watch it how it's supposed to be made. I don't want to see colorized stuff unless it's supposed to be. Personally.
Well, I guess my assumption is Mel Brooks had to okay it.
Well, yeah, but that was later down the road. He actually had to fight for this to be in black and white.
Really?
Yeah. But he got the studio to finally agree upon it.
Well.
Because I think it adds. I mean, it's what is a classic monster movie if it's not black and white?
Yeah, totally.
You know, so it's very important, and I'm glad that he fought for that. And,
right.
You know, he's fought for a lot of his stuff, you know, and he's had a great relationship with Gene Wilder with all those movies. I didn't realize until I watched this when I looked at the credits is Gene Wilder came up with a story with Mel Brooks.
Mm-hmm. Like, while they were on Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, so I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I got to learn a lot of history about how this stuff was made. Like, even the Dr. Frankenstein's laboratory, they actually brought in the set decorator from the original Frankenstein.
That's
cool. So basically Mel Brooks kind of worked a deal to be like, let me rent all this old stuff from you. So he came in and they reset it up from the original Frankenstein.
That is so
cool. So I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, little things like that, you know, how movies get made and shit, it's kind of neat. And basically, you know, how the story came about. They were on the set of Blazing Saddles the last couple of weeks or whatever. And Gene Wilder came up to Mel Brooks and said, hey, I got an idea for a movie. And, you know, it's basically we could do the quintessential horror genre with Frankenstein. We can bring him back, you know. And Mel Brooks is just like, we've seen the cousin of Frankenstein. We've seen this of Frankenstein. We've seen that of Frankenstein. Like, we don't need to see another Frankenstein. And he goes, but this is my approach. And then basically Mel Brooks was like, that's hilarious. Yeah. And then they kind of were off to the races after that.
I love that.
So I thought that was kind of cool too. It was just a simple thought that Gene Wilder had, like, what if it was the grandson of Frankenstein?
The reluctant scientist.
Yeah, exactly. That, you know, refutes all of his family's work and yada, yada, yada. And so, I mean, I thought that was an interesting approach to the overall story. You know, it's a nice little...
For sure.
You know, it parallels again, like you were saying, but it's not the same exact story. Obviously, not the same exact character. But so... To that end, I thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah, and this is Gene Wilder's favorite film he's ever done.
That's what he said, and I'm like, interesting. I mean, don't get me wrong,
man. It makes sense because this is his baby, you know?
Right, yeah, right? It makes a lot of sense, yeah. Right? I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, the most Gene Wilder movies that I've seen, I mean, like Willy Wonka and shit like that, I mean, I didn't even really like Willy Wonka that much. So maybe I'm just not a huge fan.
He has a signature to his style, so maybe if you don't like it.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for me to get around it. Although I like See No Evil, Speak No Evil.
Yeah, it's good.
Which I thought was hilarious, but maybe mainly because I really love Richard Pryor.
Yeah, yeah.
So it could just be my taste. So I don't know. But does it deserve to be one of the best movies ever made on like the top 100? Like, I don't think so.
I think it deserves to be in the best comedy.
I can see it on a list in the comedy. I'm like, would it be on my top 100 best comedies? Probably, because I don't got a lot. But you know, it's a fun study in scene and character. Sure. If anything, I think that's what I really loved. That's what I really gleaned from this is like, how do you create very unique characters with very clear voices and quirks that are all different? And how do they
work together
and all work together symbiotically throughout a film? And so I learned a lot from that perspective on this.
Nice.
So
that's all I have.
That's all I got too, man. I mean, it's worth seeing. Don't get me wrong. It's worth seeing.
I
love
it. I highly recommend it.
Go see it.
Jonesy just says, see it.
Yeah, just go see it, man.
He doesn't as highly recommend it.
But. Yeah. If it's on, go for it. But this isn't something like, I guess it's tough because a lot of the movies that we've seen so far, like, I will go out of my way to go watch. Young Frankenstein isn't one of those movies that I'm like, I want to watch a comedy. I want to watch something really fun. Young Frankenstein. It's not one of those for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah. But it is, it's just like any good cinema. It is there. It's good. Yeah. It's shot well. It's, you know, those types of things. So it's worth watching.
Nice.
So if you haven't, go see it. Yeah. And if you have seen it, go watch it again.
There we go.
Yeah.
So what's making you hard this week?
So it's a new year, right? 2017. We survived it. Barely. Finally, 2016.
By the skin of our teeth.
You know, it's really funny, by the way. So, it'll be, you know, this will be released, you know, a week or whatever after the new year or whatnot. But how apropos is it to take it, bring in or end 2016 with that Mariah Carey butchery
the voice
performance
malfunction, track malfunction.
It was so funny because we were watching that and I was just laughing so hard because she's basically bringing in the ball dropping, the last moments of 2016.
And, perfectly encapsulate 2016.
The entire 2016, just basically kicking us all in the nutsack the entire time. So I thought that was kind of funny. But when it's the new year, everybody, I'm going to get in shape. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And majority of the time we say that. And then the next day, you know, nobody does shit. The couch is comfortable. Everybody's hungover. It's so funny, too, though, because we end a year by getting fucked up beyond compare. And we start a year being hungover beyond compare. Yeah. So it's like, well, how are you going to rein in the first day of this?
Yeah,
like,
I went to the gym on the first and nobody was there.
Yeah.
Everyone was hungover.
They're like, well, wait until Monday. Wait till Monday.
Diet starts Monday.
Starts Monday. I mean, I was that guy. Don't get me wrong. I was that guy too. But it's motivation, right? Motivation is tough to get through to the gym. And I just found this app called Gympact, which is kind of cool. Basically, what it is you. You pledge how many days a week you're going to work out. So 2 days, 3 days, 5 days, whatever, right? So you have the app on when you go work out, and it basically locks your time that you're there. I think you have to be there 30 minutes working out, doing the whatever. And then after you're done, it basically counts, right? So you can pledge, say, for instance, if I miss a workout, take out $20 out of my bank account. If I miss for every day that I don't go. So if I, like for me, I started 3 days. So if I don't make 3 days working out this week, it's going to take $50 out of my bank account.
Holy crap.
Right. So
keeps you accountable.
It really does. And that's what I really liked about this Gympact. And the cool part is at the end of the week, they take all the people that made their packs or didn't make their packs and all their pledges. So it could be $500. It could be $10,000. It depends on how many people are using it within that month. If they didn't make their pact, then they take that amount of money and then they divvy it out to everybody that did make their pack.
Okay.
So, my buddy was using it and he made like $65 last year just on going to the gym for showing up. You know, sometimes it's like 45 cents, sometimes it's $1, sometimes it's
free money,
10 cents or whatever. But every time you make your week, you'll get something as a reward to keep going, which I thought was really fucking cool. So I'm starting that this week and I put in 3 days. I start my working out tomorrow. And I thought, it's a nice way to have accountability. So if anybody's out there really struggling to get to the gym, I mean, nobody likes to pay for a gym membership and then pay extra on top of that. The one thing that I did, which was I thought was kind of funny, is I have my wife and I have like a bank account that really doesn't have too much money in there. But we didn't want to close it because we like this particular bank, whatever. But I have like, I don't know, just the bare minimum to keep it open at that bank. So I put the card on that. So if I don't make my gym,
you get penalized.
Penalized there too. So it's really going to force me to go. But yeah, Gympact. It's on Android and app and iPhone and all that stuff. So I would urge you guys to try it out if you guys have a really hard time actually working out.
That's very cool.
Yeah. Pretty neat. What about you, man?
For me, I saw last night Kubo and the Two Strings.
Dude, I just saw that last week.
So good.
Dude, that animation in that movie is like, phenomenal. Yeah. It's all stop motion.
Yeah.
I was like, it blew me away how good it was.
The story was just magical.
It was beautiful. And you know what's even more fun for me and my wife is because we just got back from Japan a couple weeks ago, and it was such a beautiful story.
Yeah.
And just the art direction and stuff, and just coming back from Japan, you know, we kind of, you know, still a little Japanese, I suppose, and it was beautiful, man. I really enjoyed that movie. Yeah, what was it about the movie that you liked the most, though?
I always appreciate when animated films don't talk down to kids.
Right.
Because as I was watching this, I thought, wow, some of this is like really intense for an animated movie.
Totally.
And very.
Yeah, the subject matter is very, very, I don't want to say dark, but it is.
The villains are very like scary.
Yeah.
I'm thinking like for kids, like it's intense, like the sisters. Like the
sisters or whatever.
Dude.
Yeah.
I was creeped out by those things.
Really quick though, like how gangster was those fight scenes all stop motion.
Yeah.
That's the craziest thing to me.
But the water was pretty cool.
Yeah. It was all good.
For me, I like it when they don't talk down, where they're like, kids can handle this. It's intense, but kids can handle this.
What did you think? It was really interesting because when I found out that like Matthew McConaughey was one of the voices and Charlize Theron was one of the voices. I was thinking of the mom too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was having a hard time wrapping my brain around.
You just have to ignore the whitewashing of this story. Because the Kubo is white, a little
kid. Yeah, a Kubo I can get okay with, but it was Matthew McConaughey has such like
a distinct voice.
It was really hard for me to get into that particular character. Yeah. But I really pushed myself to like not think about him going, all right, you know, as much as I possibly could. And then it was pretty good.
Yeah.
But you have to just shut that off. Yeah. But you can hear it so quick.
Totally.
You know, but other than that, I really did enjoy it.
Yeah. I highly recommend. This has been a really good year in animation.
Yeah, I agree. So. Finding Dory, Finding Dora, obviously
Dory.
No, what was the other one we saw?
Finding Dory, Zootopia.
Zootopia, that was it.
Moana.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't seen that one yet.
It's so good.
Yeah, I think we're going to go tomorrow. Little Prince, that was the one I was going to say. Yeah. Little Prince. Yeah, I'm curious who's going to win best animation this year.
I think it's
going to
be Moana. Usually it's Disney or Pixar.
To be honest with you, I really hope that it's fucking Zootopia.
Really?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was such a great little caper.
I thought it was good too.
You know, I don't know. And it's just so much social commentary.
Yeah, but it kind of drops it at the end, though. I felt a little bit disappointed. Kind of rushed.
It was a 2-hour movie, man.
They kind of dropped the whole racism element at the end where it's like, all right, well, your solution doesn't really apply to people, it applies to animals. I thought that was definitely a good one. Other than that, I think we're good. We're in probably a couple weeks. You and I are going to have a special episode where we give out the very first annual UFR Awards. Where we're going to base that off of movies that we have seen that came out in 2016.
So, question to this: is this like the new movies that are coming out, or movies that we've seen from the podcast over the last year?
Anything, not podcasts. Anything that came out in the theaters in 2016.
Gotcha.
Based on what we've seen. We're going to be very specific about that. So someone's just
so
like,
much
what
stuff.
The fuck?
Yeah.
Like, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, we didn't see that. Yeah. So it's based off of what we saw, and we'll both give our awards. We're coming up with the categories now, but we'll both have our own. So one of them's animated, so you'll have the one you think is the best. I'll have the one that I think best. All of them.
I like them all.
So, so we'll probably release that one in a couple weeks, in January.
Sweet. And so also we're going to be starting our Patreon coming up this month. We're going to be doing t-shirts and all types of fun stuff. We got our tubular 80s podcast we're going to be doing for you guys. So just stay tuned. There's going to be a lot of little changes happening throughout the podcast. We got a new brand that we're going to be launching for the show in the next couple of weeks. Cool. Logos look, I'm really excited. Thank you, Sculptor.
Yeah, Sculptor.
So yeah, just stay tuned with all that stuff. And you guys can obviously go to the website, UFRpodcast.com. There's obviously Twitter at Facebook, UFR Podcast,
Instagram.
All. We're all there. So just follow. Like, share, subscribe, do all those types of things, yep. Man. It really helps us out. And we got some really fun shit coming out for you guys, I promise, in the next couple of weeks, man.
So, meanwhile, next week, The Bridge on the River Kwai.
Ooh, I've never seen that movie.
I have not either.
The River Kwai?
Yeah.
Who did that?
I don't know.
Shit.
The 70s. The 70s did that.
We're far out, man.
All right. Until next time.
We out.